And now, the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland Podcast. Here are your hosts, Mike Tolsma, Adam Bennett, and Mike Arnold.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland Podcast. My voice not be familiar to you, but I'm Mike Tolsma, back after a two-week hiatus with the fellas Mike Arnold and Adam Bennett here on the HFS Cleveland Podcast. Thanks for joining us again for another installment of the show. And, you know, as we get further on in the Cleveland sports scene, and as we move forward here, moving into basketball season, we're going to reflect a little bit on the Browns today and their loss to the Rams yesterday afternoon. And the Cavs tipping off with the Bulls tomorrow. The NBA is finally back. Thank you, thank you, thank you. The NBA is back. So, gentlemen, thanks for having me back. I know I was gone for a little bit, but I'm safely in my new home now and got my internet up, and I'm happy to be back with you guys.
Welcome back. It's good to have somebody, you know, Arnie and I get so mired in the Cleveland culture. It's good to have a fresh perspective back, especially this week, because, well, I'll tell you what, I'm about at my wit's end with the Browns, so thank God that you're here to provide a little perspective.
At least the Cavs start tomorrow,
right? Yeah. That's the best part, man. The Cavs are back, and the Browns kind of stink. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, I'm, you know, being from Buffalo and talking with you guys, it's really funny because we just share so many of the same, you know, disappointments all the time. You know, the Bills lost in an absolutely just ugly fashion to the Jaguars yesterday morning. And, you know, we have in Buffalo, we have the Sabres, which I guess would be the equivalent to your Cavs, except the Cavs are actually good. And personally, myself, you know, I'm a Toronto Maple Leafs fan for the NHL. So, I mean, they're worse than the Sabres. Like, they stink. They stink. So, hey, I get the, you know, I'm on all spectrums here. I haven't had a winner in a long time. At least, you know, you guys got the Cavs. But before we get into the Cavs, because there's so much good to talk about with them, we got to start with the bad. And the Cleveland Browns lost 24-6 to the Rams. I'm sure most of you listeners know that by now. And, you know, it's hard to figure out where to start with them. Because I watch them, of course, as an outsider looking in. And I'm so fascinated by this team. Because, you know, 2-3 weeks ago when we talk about them, it's Josh McCown is coming in like a gangbuster. And he's awesome. And what's going on? And now it's back to, okay, McCown kind of stinks again. And he's running into walls and falling over and you got memes everywhere, and it's just, it's a mess. But then on the other end of it, you got guys like, I'm a huge Duke Johnson fan, and it's not because he's on my fantasy team, but that does help. I just think he's going to be so explosive if he's used the right way. I want you both to give me your quick thoughts, you know, on, obviously, you're not thinking that it's going to go the Browns' way the rest of the year. You're kind of in my boat where we think the season's probably over. But is there anything positive that you're taking out of this right now?
No. just no. I'm going to jump right into this. I don't think we have the right coach. I know we don't have the right general manager. And so, you know, to me, I'm not surprised by it. I actually, Arnie and I texted yesterday during the game, and it's just like, I told him, I said, I don't even get mad at it anymore. I don't. I expect it. You know, St. Louis is a good team, but they're St. Louis. Like, they haven't finished above 500 in how long? And I don't think they've made the playoffs yet under Jeff Fisher. They're, you know, they have talent, but they totally annihilated us in all three phases.
Well, they're a young up and coming team.
Well, yeah, but you know what? So are we for the last however many years. You know, it's not, you know, we have the highest paid defense in the National Football League. The highest. We put more money into our defense than anybody else into the NFL, including the Rams. And the Rams' defense, boy, I'd trade for them in a heartbeat compared to us. I'd trade for their coaching in a heartbeat over us. I'd trade for their offense over us. They were able to move the ball up and down the field. We shot ourselves in the foot and turned it over, and we looked like the JV team. And, you know, that's what we've come down to. And so, you know, do I have any hope? No. You know, could Duke Johnson be okay for the rest of the year? Well, sure, maybe we got one draft pick, right? But, you know, we've had four first-round picks in the last 2 years, and only one of them started on Sunday, Danny Shelton. And, oh, by the way, statistically, he's ranked the worst at his position in the National Football League. He's ranked the worst. And the other three can't even find the field, and they were first-round picks. And so I know we have the wrong GM. I'm seeing time and time again, and we'll get into this more, that we don't have the right coach. And so now we're back to the question, square one, okay, well, we never have continuity. Do we just let them try to do their thing for 5 years? Or do we start talking about making a change? And Arnie, I don't know where you're at, but I watched that game in St. Louis yesterday, and I said, we need to make a change.
You know, and the hard thing is, where are we going to go? Like, who's going to want to come and be the GM of this team right now? You know, if you want to get someone respected and who has a track record of doing something well, like Bill Polian, they don't want to come into this mess of a situation. I almost want to come down, and I want new ownership almost, if that's possible.
Yeah, I do, too. Honestly. I do, too. And look, you know, he's not everything that we were promised. We were promised an owner who's going to be hands-on and promote accountability. And we've got an owner that is less in control than Randy Lerner was. You know, he spends really one day a week in Berea. Yeah, he doesn't talk. He just hides out. We got a team president. I said this on Twitter. You know, Alex Shiner, he's raised our season ticket prices every year and given us presided over a worse product. We have a general manager who they hired Joe Banner, who hired Mike Lombardi. Then they fire both of them just to give full control to Ray Farmer, who is totally in over his head. I mean, just totally. There's no question about that. His track record over 2 years now says he has no idea what he's doing. And then we have a head coach who, like you said, you know, it's hard to get coaches that are aren't coordinators here to Cleveland. But, you know, I will say this, and I've heard this a lot on Twitter from a lot of people. It's, well, you know, I don't like Farmer and I don't like Pettine. So where do we go from here? Who wants to come to Cleveland? And, you know, the one thing that I'd remind people is look at the team playing tonight, Arizona, and the job that Bruce Arians is doing there. Arizona they were a bigger joke than, you know, back a couple of years ago than we are now. And at the time, you would have said, well, who the hell wants to go to Arizona? You know, they can't win. Ken Wisenhunt turned them around a little bit, and then they went kind of back into the dumpster, and then they get Bruce. But before Wisenhunt ever got there and they made it to the Super Bowl, they were terrible. They were terrible, and nobody would ever want to go there. You know, so there are a lot of teams and a lot of instances where, you know, you'd say, "Who went?" Look at Oakland, you know, and they get Jack Del Rio, and I've made fun of Jack Del Rio on this podcast before, but all of a sudden, yeah, they're playing well. And so I just don't, you know, I don't buy that whole argument, well, who wants to come here? The onus is on the owner to find somebody good. This is the National Football League. There are 32 GM jobs, and there are 32 head coaching jobs, and there are thousands of people who want them. And so, and I don't worry about, well, who's going to come here? And, you know, can we find somebody qualified? No, we can find somebody qualified. And by the way, you know what? You may have to pay a little bit more money, but fine. You know, throw a bunch of money at somebody and get them in here. But it's no excuse to keep people that have demonstrated that they're incompetent. And right now, I think both our GM and our head coach, let alone our owner, like you said, and our team president have done that.
I look at it like this too, okay? Like, if you guys had your choice, would you rather have right now, and I'm talking specifically the head coach, you know, if Mike Pettine's not the guy, which I think, you know, all three of us could have at some point probably said, I don't think he's going to be the guy. Because let's face it, Pettine was probably like the third or fourth choice to be the head coach in Cleveland when he was hired.
More like 10th, yeah.
Or like 10th, that's fair. That's also fair. You know, would you rather have, though, would you rather have a fresh, you know, new face, a Kevin Sumlin, you know, somebody like that, that's a guy in college, a young guy, a young coordinator? Or do you want like the retread? Do you want the Mark Trestmans of the world, guys like that? What would you rather have?
Here's what I want for the first time since 1999. I want to hire a GM first. I want to hire a GM first who can then hire his own coach. That's what I want. We've done it ass backwards for the last 15 years. We hire a coach, and then we hire a GM, and then we tell the GM, we'll go pick good players, but then the coaches don't like the players for the scheme that they run, and then we blow it up and repeat and repeat. I want a GM to come in and say, okay, these are the types of players that I'm going to get on my team, And I'm going to damn well find a head coach that knows how to coach those types of players. And, you know, Toles, you know, you threw some names out there. Here's the only thing that I'd say, and this is the only thing that I look at with coaches, and I don't think we've had one since Eric Mangini, who's a great coach, but turned out to be our GM too, and when he did that, he set us back a long way. I want a coach who can take the players on his roster and develop a scheme for those players that's going to work. That's what I want. Evaluate the strengths. We don't do that, though. We you know, Mike Pettine, he is so stubborn. And even today in his press conference, he refuses to change his scheme. Doesn't matter that he doesn't have the players to run it, or maybe he thinks he does, but we're giving up, you know, more yards than anybody else in the league. He's scheme over players. I want a coach that's players over scheme.
Now, does that not speak of, and that to me speaks where you want to see it. That sounds like, to me, a guy saying, you need young, you need innovative. You know, you don't need Mike Shanahan. You don't need, you know,
I love Mike Shanahan.
Okay, so we got a differing point of views. Because what I hear from you, Adam, is you may be coming more of like a, maybe give me a Jim Mora. He's been out of the league for a while. He's made a great case at UCLA to come back into the league. Kevin Sumlin, he could be something special. He did a nice job. He worked with Johnny Manziel. Let's not take that away from the guy. Even like a guy like Pep Hamilton, who, listen, he was a big name this offseason as a potential head coach. And he's sitting there in Indy, and he might be the next guy up to be a head coach somewhere. And then on the reverse side, Arnie, I'm going to come to you. You say you want a guy like Mike Shanahan. He's got that veteran experience, but I personally think he might be outdated. I don't know if he even fits the game anymore.
I just know that his scheme fits our line very well.
Okay.
That's the one thing I like. Because the money we've invested in our line, and it's just brutal to watch them. You know, it's McCown, granted, he holds the ball a while, and he's not afraid to take a hit, but, I mean, he's getting pressured a lot. I mean, one of his fumbles was not his fault this over the weekend. He just got hit from behind when we have, you know, some of the, we've put, I don't know how much money, I don't know how high paid our line is compared
pretty
to
pretty high. Defense.
It's high.
I know we're up there, yeah.
No, yeah, just, I agree.
Yeah, we'd run his zone scheme. He's proven he can do it. Granted, I don't know how he could fit the scheme of the players, but he's been successful. He can change the culture, especially with when we're as penalized as we are right now. It's brutal to watch.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. We are the most undisciplined team other than Buffalo in the NFL. I mean, it's just, that's coaching. And I've had this argument with a few people on Twitter at our account, you know, oh, that's not that's coaching. Trust me on that. That's coaching. You know, Eric Mangini came here, made it a point of emphasis, and for all this strength, I feel like I'm talking about Eric Mangini a lot, which is pretty sad that's the guy that we're like referring to here. But he made it a point of emphasis that his teams weren't going to get penalized, and we were, I think, you know, one of the least, if not the least, penalized team in the National Football League while he was here. Because he made it a point of emphasis. And when you're not emphasizing accountability on and off the field, you're going to see penalties. You're going to see the situations that we've seen in the locker room. Let's not forget, you know, this whole thing on accountability. And this speaks to coaches, too. You know, Mike Pettine's offensive line coach got fired for domestic violence. All right. And I think they made the right move in firing him, even though there weren't any charges filed. Well, then Johnny Manziel goes out and does whatever he does, and the police decide not to, you know, press charges. But the team says, well, you know, we'll keep him as a number two for now, and let's not do anything with that. There's a different message being sent in the locker room. Nobody, you know, how do you, if you're a player, how do you ever, you know, find accountability, because you don't know if you're going to be picked on like the line coach or if you're going to be treated like Manziel. Or, you know, what have you. Is it dictated by talent? Is it dictated by if you're a veteran? Bill Cowher said it the other day. That locker room, and he's referring to our locker room, is screaming for leadership. And the fact that Bill Cowher feels like he can say that about another coach in the National Football League tells you what he thinks about a guy like Mike Pettine. So, you know, we go back to the coaches. The only thing I want, I don't care if it's Mike Shanahan or Kevin Sumlin or some coordinator I've never heard of, I'll be okay with it if we would just go out and hire a GM first, and that GM hires who he wants as a head coach. And then together, they build the roster and a type of team that can go out and compete where everybody's on the same page. But Ray Farmer, I mean, look at, I've learned from a young age, you know, not to judge words, but to judge actions. And Ray Farmer and Mike Pettine are nowhere near on the same page. Nowhere near. Mike Pettine won't play Ray Farmer's picks, and Ray Farmer doesn't care. He'll still pick guys that he thinks are going to succeed. And so, you know, I think both of them hope that one of the two wins out over some sort of power struggle here. But I think what's going to end up happening is they're both going to be gone as a result of it. And I just hope, no matter who we get, it's hire the GM and let him hire a head coach. That's all I want.
That's fair. I mean, that's usually how it's done.
Except here in Cleveland.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I think that you guys in Cleveland are one more 6-10 away from it being blown up again. And yeah. I think it's one of those things, too, where if it really doesn't get blown up, the fan base is going to go wild. You know, like, the streets are going to be on fire in Cleveland. The takes are going to be roasting hot, and everything's just going to go crazy. But I guess, you know, I don't want to touch too much on the whole is it time to sit McCown and start Johnny Manziel thing, but I'm going to ask the question only because of one thing. Josh McCown is not going to get any younger. All right, and we're getting to a point with this team where you got to start seeing what toys work and what don't. Listen, Duke Johnson, I speak highly of him. I think he's a nice player. He could be a corner piece of this offense going forward. The wide receiver position, I think the cabinets are pretty bare. But at quarterback, you got to figure out what you got in your former first-round pick. And Josh McCown, sorry, but I lost all respect for him watching him slide into that freaking wall. That was hilarious.
I've interjected. I've, like, argued with people on this a few times. I think it's so stupid that NFL stadiums have concrete.
I know.
If you've ever worn detachable cleats, you know that you cannot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
As soon as you get off turf, it's impossible to walk. So it's really embarrassing that happened to him, but I feel like he got way too much flack for that.
It's just funny. It's like Kevin Cobb slipping on a mat before in a preseason game and just tearing his knee up or whatever happened a few years ago. Yeah, it's the same thing. I love it.
It plays into the metaphor of the Browns. That's why it's funny. Yeah, it's not anything about Josh. It's, you know, here we are in Cleveland. We're, you know, just kind of running our heads into walls. That's what it is.
Let me tell you what I think about Josh McCown, though. In all honesty, I haven't spoke to you guys over the course of when he really was playing well. I thought he really carried the team. And he looked like a guy that, if you can get play like that for a stretch of, you know, 8-10 games, you're in a pretty good spot. But it seems the offense is pretty one-dimensional. Like, the run game has been very weak. I expected more out of Crowell, but I don't want to get carried away with that. I want to know about Johnny Manziel. Where are we at with him? You know, he came in, he played, he was a little 4-for-5 yesterday. He didn't do much. I think he was 7 yards per attempt. Any thoughts of getting him out there?
I'm going to say what I said earlier this year, and that when he's ready, they'll play him, but they're not going to rush him because I think too many times we've seen guys get drafted to the Browns with a lot of potential. Us rush them in because we feel like we picked them with a high draft pick and they need to play because of it. And then they just, you know, their psyche gets messed up. And even though they have the potential to be good, they're not ready. And it just affects them the rest of their career. I think that Brady Quinn could have been a great quarterback. I'm biased on that as a Notre Dame fan. But I also think Tim Couch had the same thing happen to him where he just was thrown in too early and he never had a chance to succeed because he never was comfortable and never knew enough coming in and it was going to affect him long term.
Okay. Adam?
I think it's time. I think, you know, I said this the other day, even before we played the Rams, we had to finish the year 7-3, even to have a chance at the playoffs. Now we'd have to finish the year 8-2, just to, or 7-2, I should say, or no, whatever it is. We've got however many losses. Yeah, 7-2. You know, and probably even 8-1, to have a chance. That's not going to happen. You've seen our schedule. It's brutal. But I think it plays into, again, Mike Pettine's stubbornness. And I think this is why fans are getting so upset. And by the way, Tolles, you talked about Cleveland being on fire if a change isn't made. I just want to point out that you know, I've been on Cleveland Twitter for a few years now, and I've had a pulse on the fan base for a long time. I've never seen the fan base, number one, this apathetic, and number two, this upset in season. And that includes, like, the Pat Shurmur era. That includes back when we started, like, 1-11. I think it was in Mangini's first year. I've never seen him this upset. And part of that is because it's the same thing happening over and over and over again. You know, when every time we blow it up, this seems to happen. But I think part of it is Patton's stubbornness. He does not really care about, I don't think he cares about the organization finding out whether Johnny Manziel has it or not. I think he just looks at it as who's the better quarterback. And right now he's right. Josh McCown is the better quarterback. But I think we could be 2-12 and he'd still be playing McCown. I really do. I don't think he gives one damn about long-term organizational you know, success. He just wants to play the better guy. And when you're that short-sighted, again, it just proves to me that you're not really the long-term answer at head coach.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's, this coaching thing is gonna, it's really gonna hover around him. Is there any chance he gets fired midseason?
No. No.
No, I don't think so.
We don't have anybody on staff that could, you know, that's qualified. We have a rookie offensive coordinator and then the worst defensive coordinator in football. So, you know, it won't be during the season for sure.
Look at Dan Campbell. Look at Dan Campbell. Guy's been a magician.
Yeah, and that's...
He was like an assistant tight ends coach or something.
I'm glad you brought that up because, I've been meaning to make that point on Twitter and I just haven't had the opportunity, and I'll make it now for the people that are listening. That is example number one of how important coaching is to the culture of a team, because they had talent in Miami, and everybody knew it. And we think we have talent in Cleveland. I mean, right now we're paying for a Mercedes-Benz on defense, and instead, you know, we're watching the Ford Fiesta version of it. So, you know, there's talent here, but I don't, you know, I think Patton breeds a culture of, oh, well, you know, he's just so laid back, not emotional, just, you know, go through the motions, here we go, everything's fine, even keel. Where, you know, look at Joe, that's kind of how Joe Philbin was at Miami, and then steps, you know, insert Dan Campbell, who, you know, they kill the Titans, and then they just murder Houston. I mean, murder them.
Yeah.
And so that's, to me, that's coaching. What else is it? You know, it's not... He's affecting the culture there, and I want a coach that consistently, week in and week out, can affect and impact the culture.
I know. That's I don't know, man. It's gonna be a fun ride with you guys down the stretch, just to kind of see where your minds are at. In about
it's not gonna be fun for us.
No, not at all.
In about 3 or 4 weeks with this, so let's get to the happy times.
Yeah.
And we got the Cavs, and I am so happy that basketball's finally back. You know, for people who don't, and I live in a market where, you know, the NBA is not very popular, and we make it, you know, we try and make sure that we talk about the NBA on Hardfall Sports, our podcast, because it's not talked about around here. And I'm sure for you guys it's obviously a lot different. You have the best player in the world in his city, you know, attention everywhere. The NBA, for people that don't understand it and don't watch it, they think that it's kind of just one of those things where they go out and they're kind of playing street ball and they don't really care until the playoffs. People can't be that. That is such a misguided view of the NBA. It really is, because the NBA is, it's, you know, obviously it's a marathon, not a sprint. It's a long season, but there are fewer days that I enjoy more than opening night in the NBA. And I'll tell you why. One thing is, I watched last year when Cleveland played, I believe it was the Knicks, on opening night.
Yeah.
That arena, man, oh my goodness gracious, that place was rocking. And I just was like, this is awesome. Like, the first quarter, everything was just so intense, and it felt like the playoffs, and it's, you know, it's the first game, and they got 81 more. And I'm just so stoked about it, and of course, I'm sure you guys are super stoked about the Cavs. You got to think that they're on the cusp of making another run at a championship, and they said starts tomorrow. I mean, you're playing the Chicago Bulls. When you look around the Eastern Conference, there's not many teams that are really going to be stepping up to the plate to challenge these guys. You got the Hawks. You can argue that you got the Wizards. You know, the Raptors are trying to build a franchise around Kyle Lowry.
Skinny Kyle Lowry.
I mean, sorry, you know. I mean, obviously, you got the Heat. But I don't see it. I think the Cavs are going to run the table, And I think they're going to run the table, and then they're going to be 10 times better when Kyrie comes back. So how pumped are you guys that basketball's finally back?
I personally can't put it into words. I mean, it's going to be a little frustrating, I guess, watching some of the regular season, because I think we're going to take a very Spursian approach to it and rest a lot of guys and make sure we're really healthy for the playoffs, because we could win 54 games and end up with the one seed in the East. But everyone thinks we're going to stumble out of the gate. And then I looked at our October and November schedule, and it's weak. I mean, we play maybe 4 or 5 games against playoff teams. Then Kyrie will come back soon after that. And I mean, the line that offense with Kyrie, Love, and LeBron is just a treat to watch. It's going to be almost unstoppable. And as long as they're healthy in the playoffs, I mean, I don't see a reason why we don't walk right into the finals, no problem.
Yeah, I look at the East. Two things. Number one, to answer your first part of that question, Tolles, I think the NBA, to people that aren't basketball people, looks very laid back and nonchalant. And I think, for people that are into basketball, they see that the NBA really is so much more advanced than what you really see with the naked eye. And so that makes it fun, over the course of a long season to see how it's managed and all those different things. The second part of your question, when I look at the East, I'm really excited, kind of like Arnie said, you don't have to win a lot to win the East. And you go down the teams in the East, Charlotte's not there yet. Boston, as long as Brad Stevens is their coach, they're a scary draw in the playoffs, but they're not built to contend for anything yet. Orlando is nothing. Indiana has regressed. Toronto, no thanks. I don't believe in their coach. I just think their roster is kind of piecemeal together where they can make the playoffs, but, good luck once you get there. The Knicks are the Browns of the NBA. They're just garbage.
I think the Nets are also like that.
Yeah, Brooklyn is, they're a dumpster fire. The Wizards, I think, I would be much more scared of them if they had a competent coach. And no offense, I say no offense, but I mean, I just, their coach, I'm not a big believer in him at all. Atlanta, the same thing. I'd love to run into Atlanta in the playoffs again. Would love it. They're not built to be a playoff contending team.
I'm waiting for you to say my sleeper.
Well, the rest of the, first of all, Chicago.
Give me the Bucks, man.
We'll get to them in a second.
As long as Michael Carter-Williams is their point guard, I'm not scared of the Bucks.
No, I'm not a big Jason Kidd guy at all.
Big Jason Kidd guy. I think he has done a phenomenal job.
He's done well, but I will say that I think he's good in terms of guiding them and managing them through the season, but when I think it gets to actual game coaching, it gets a little shady. And he was a great point guard and he knows the game, but there's so many more things that you have to consider as a coach. But Chicago without Rose, it's Hoiberg's first year. I think they're a lot kind of like what they were last year. Miami, Skip Bayless, I don't get people that take Skip Bayless seriously. I don't. He was the one who touted Brandon Weeden as like the next Joe Montana. He said Trent Richardson was a great pick. He doesn't know what he's talking. He said Miami would finish with a better record than Cleveland if Dwayne Wade stays relatively healthy, which is like the most ridiculous statement that you can. Now Miami's good. And I think I give Pat Riley a lot of credit. I think he's one of the best executives in the league. I think Spoelstra is a good coach. But they're not even close to the level that Cleveland's at, even when we're not healthy. So that statement was ridiculous. And then the rest, Detroit and Philly, I don't even think I need to talk about either one of those teams. So the East is very, Arnie said, you can win 54 games and get a one seed. And it really is about, I think, what Cavs fans – and this is going to be hard for Cleveland fans to do, is you got to go through the season with a long-term approach. You can't overreact at a couple of losses where they shouldn't lose the game on paper. You've got to understand that scheme-wise, they're going to try a lot of things building up to the playoffs. Rotationally, they're going to try a lot of things building up to the playoffs. And then they're trying, most importantly, to get everybody healthy for the playoffs. So, you know, record-wise, are they going to win, you know, more games than any team in history? No. And I think, you know, being in Cleveland, we'll overreact every time that they lose. Just keep that long-term approach, because at the end of the day, it's about how you play once the regular season's over and the real fun begins.
Who do you think the biggest threat to the Cavs is in the East? Because I personally think the Wizards are going to take a big step this year, because Rainey Whitman, like you said, the Wizards coach, does not have a great track record, but then he realized in the playoffs that Otto Porter Jr. was actually not bad and played in more than 10 minutes a game, and they were very good with him on the floor. I think they're our biggest threat. I'm not as high in Miami as everyone else is, because I don't know who a backcourt of Dwayne Wade and Goran Dragic is going to stop.
No. I agree with you. I think Washington, from a talent perspective, I think they have the most talent outside of Cleveland in the East. And I do think, you know, if Whitman just stays out of the way, they'll be okay. I'll tell you this, though. Like I said before, I do not want to see Boston in the playoffs. I don't. Yeah. Brad Stevens scares the hell out of me. He's that good as a coach. He'll get that team into the playoffs. I mean, it's amazing when you look back at what he did last year with his roster. I mean, that was incredible. They had no business being in the playoffs, let alone playing the way that they did in the playoffs. And I know we swept them. But that was a fun series. Like, that wasn't just crushing them. So I don't want to see them. I'd rather see anybody else but them, especially early in the playoffs. Although there is something to be said about seeing them, because then, you know, it gets you tested pretty early on.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
I think you're looking at, in terms of, you know, who their biggest threat is, it comes down to, really, you know, the NBA, it's built around superstars. You know, this isn't like the NFL or, you know, the NHL or any. This is a superstar-ridden league where if you have a top guy, your team's probably going to be pretty good. Now, of course, the Knicks stink, and they have Carmelo Anthony, who is a very good player. But
I have
it's
to
hard.
Get...
You know, it's hard in the East because there's not a lot of teams with superstar players on it.
By the way, before we finish, and I don't mean to interrupt, but just before we finish, I have to get into an argument, because I saw a tweet from Arnie about Carmelo. And so finish your point. I just have to bring that. There's an argument coming about Melo between me and Arnie. But go ahead, Tom. Right.
If you look at, you know, who has a superstar in the Eastern Conference, Cleveland, and then who? Maybe the Knicks. Maybe the Pacers. We don't know how Paul George will be in a full season. I think Paul George was arguably on his way up to being a top 10 player. There's no denying that. And Indiana looked like a team, when he was healthy, that looked like, you know, if he was healthy last year and, you know, the Cavs had their big three put together, I think that would have been a battle within itself. Now, of course, the Pacers, they're depleted, and they brought in, you know, Monte Ellis, who loves shooting the basketball, and he normally doesn't hit his shots, and you know, they got rid of Roy Hibbert, who kind of stunk, and they have a lot of moving pieces. Paul George, I don't think he's a guy that can do it himself. You know, David West was an anchor of that team. George Hill, nice little point guard. He's okay. It's hard. It's hard to look at a team in the East and be like, they are going to be a threat, because nobody else has superior talent to the Cleveland Cavaliers. We're talking about a team that's got not one, not two, but three superstar players on it. And then you're talking about how, you know, maybe the third or fourth best team in the Eastern Conference is like the Raptors, who are building their roster around Kyle Lowry. And it's like, what are you guys doing? So it's hard. I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say John Wall with the Wizards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's obviously up and coming. I don't know if I'm going to declare him a superstar yet, but he's there. He's on the cusp.
Jimmy Butler.
You know, Jimmy Butler on the cusp. But there's no distinguished stars except for Carmelo. Mm-hmm. And the team around him is a joke.
Well, you know what?
Go ahead. Go with your argument.
Okay, well, it's just, you brought up Melo again. I'm just going to say this, and I'm going to let it sit there now. Okay, if you gave me the opportunity to draft a team in the NBA, and there was no salary cap, and I could pick any player that I wanted, okay, you know, and I have, let's say, 12 spots on my roster, I would not pick Carmelo with my 12th spot, let alone my top five. That's the only comment I'm going to make.
I mean, I don't know if I can agree with that.
you got to think of the year that the when New York was the two seed in the East, and you look at Raymond Felton was the point guard of that team.
Fat Raymond Felton, too.
Yeah.
Not like skinny Raymond Felton.
J.R. Smith was the number two scoring option on that team, and we've seen in the finals how brutal that can be. And it's just recently, even the last couple of years, when he's been carrying those Knicks teams, it's been a lot of, all right, you know, let's just kind of get Melo the ball with 3 seconds in the shot clock, and he still produced decently efficiently, and he finds ways to score when no one on that offense is competent at all.
How about the fact that Carmelo Anthony has carried the Denver Nuggets into the playoffs in the Western Conference?
Yeah, they were a top, I don't even remember if it was a 3 seed or what they were, but they were good.
They were dominant at home back then.
Denver is always dominant at home because of the altitude.
Well, okay, but they were dominant at home, but they still stink now. They were dominant at home. There was the one year that they actually took out the, I think it was the Lakers.
I think they
took out the Lakers.
How far has Melo gone in the playoffs in his career? What's the farthest point he's ever gone?
And
Second round,
and that's a fair argument. That's a fair argument. But here's the thing with Carmelo Anthony. He has never, ever played with a guy, any guy, really. He's never played with anybody that's got anywhere near the same amount of talent he has. So if we're going to throw the playoff thing around, he's been doing it himself. And then, I mean, I don't want to come at you, this is the Cleveland podcast, but you know, LeBron has been doing it with a bunch of guys that make him a much better player.
Well, in Miami, yes, but LeBron, when he was in Cleveland the first time, had, you know, the Flint Tropics around him and still brought us to the finals 1 year. But here's the thing, Melo, when I watch him as somebody who, you know, I love the game more than any other game, you know, I'm a basketball guy at heart. He is an offense killer. Okay, he's an offense killer. I would argue you can't put good players around Melo because he's not willing to sacrifice what it takes to be a good offense and raise the play of those around him. You know, we think LeBron shot a lot in the finals. You know, Melo, the flow of the offense when he's in the game is so bad because, you know, it's give it to Melo and he'll dribble around for 10 seconds. And then he'll try to size up a shot, and if it's not there, then he may pass. But then he also may keep the ball again and take a fadeaway J from 20 feet. And sometimes he hits and it looks good. And, you know, granted, he takes a lot of shots because he's the only option on what they have now. But I don't think he can succeed with good players around him. I just, nothing against him. I've never met the guy. I don't have anything against him. I don't root against him. I view him as a team killer, and LeBron is totally different in the sense that there are times LeBron can be like that, but LeBron over the course of an 80-whatever game season and then the playoffs, and you know, he can elevate the play of those around him.
I don't think Melo
cannot do that. Melo can, his own play is great, but he doesn't affect anybody around him, in my opinion. And by the way, he plays zero defense, none. If I coached against him, I'd go after him like you wouldn't believe.
I think the thing with Carmelo Anthony, though, is he's a different player than a guy like LeBron, though, because LeBron really is, you know, he's like a point forward, if you will. You know, he's a guy that will control the ball. And now, Carmelo is he's ball dominant. He's almost kind of like a Kobe, in a sense.
He's a poor man's Kobe. Poor man's Kobe. You know,
But the difference is that LeBron, he is just so good with his distribution and the way that he can get everybody involved. But I think that's a lot of the product of the guys around him. You know, I'm not saying, like, I don't think LeBron's necessarily making certain guys better. I think he's just utilizing the things he has around him. Guys want to play with him. Where Carmelo, he hasn't had the chance. I would love to see Carmelo play with Chris Paul. I would. I think it would be completely different.
Carmelo, I want to say it was the 2008 Olympics in the gold medal game. He carried that team
it. That's a good point. That's a very good point. That is.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no. The only thing I was going to say is I think, Tolles, to your point, I see LeBron a lot like I see Tom Brady or Peyton Manning in football in that it doesn't matter who you put around him. He's got a way of making, the best come out of people, and that like he demands, like, if you're going to stand on the floor with me, you better damn well be good enough to do it and be giving the type of effort that I expect you to give. And that you know, that's leadership. And I don't think Carmelo has any leadership whatsoever. None. I think you put, like Arnie said, you know, you put him in an Olympic environment, then great. You know, but he's got that structure and support around him. He's not the first option in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. But Carmelo, you know, to lead a team, I wouldn't want him on the Cavs. Seriously, like, if you told me right now we could trade Mo Williams for Carmelo Anthony straight up, I wouldn't want to do it. I would not want to do it. I think it would cause our offense with Love, Kyrie, LeBron, and Melo trying to share the ball around. I think we would take a step back. I really do.
It's already hard to share the ball with three guys like that. You know, and that's the thing with the Kevin Love thing from last year. You got to find ways to get all these guys the ball. You know, I mean, now we're talking about, if you want to even dig deeper, you just gave Tristan Thompson almost a max.
Now, granted, he can come off the bench and average 8 points and 8 rebounds.
He's a defensive guy. He's an anchor. I understand that. But
if I could say something, by the way, about that deal, because we hadn't had the chance to talk to it yet. I've seen so many people online talk about how he won that deal. I'm just thinking he wanted begging for $94 million, and we gave him $12 million less than that. Like, the Cavs absolutely came away as the winners of that.
Not to mention the salary cap skyrocketing too. I mean, that deal's going to look minuscule compared to what other deals are going to look like once the cap jumps.
I'll make the same points I made a couple weeks ago when, you know, the holdout was happening. Number one, and Ken Carmen and I talked about this when we had Ken on. Look at the deals, some of the deals that front court players got in the NBA this offseason, max deals. Just look at the list. Like, I'm not even going to recite names. Just if you can go look at the list, go look at the list. There are some really bad players that got max deals.
You bet.
So, you know, again, I think it's a great deal. Arnie, you're right. It's a great deal for the Cavs. Again, you know, historically in the NBA, front court players matter. They're going to get paid more money. But I think, you know, people undervalue Tristan. You cannot just look at points and rebound. You cannot do it. He was the second best player on the floor throughout most of the playoffs for us behind LeBron. I mean, the possessions that he kept alive and then the possessions that he ended the other way with his rebounding alone when he was like the only one doing it, when Mozgov was in foul trouble and it's just Tristan on the floor and the hustle plays and you know, all that heart stuff. That, you know, that doesn't show up on a stat sheet, but again, I'll say it again. David Blatt was begging for that deal to get done, begging for it to get done. There's no way he wanted to lose Tristan. Tristan's valuable. He's not, you know, he's not a max contract player, and from an individual's talent standpoint, not even close. But when it relates to what he brings to the team, he's worth a lot of the money that they're giving him. And you know,
he's a value guy.
He is. No question. And I credit Dan Gilbert. Dan Gilbert, you know, he takes a lot of heat. He took a lot of heat over the whole LeBron thing. There are, I don't know of many owners in the NBA that would be paying the type of luxury tax that he's paying this year. He's paying more in luxury tax this year than the Indians ownership group is paying on payroll. On payroll! To, you know, so that, in and of itself, that's a championship mentality right there. And I absolutely commend him and the Cavs. And Tristan, they got it done before the season, and now you know we can go in with a full roster and try to win a championship.
Let's close with this then. You know, I mean, who do you guys got tomorrow? Day one, who you got? Cavs, Bulls. Don't be homers either. I want to know what you really think,
Arnie.
Cavs. I mean, I don't think it's even close. Especially now they're starting the Bulls are starting a front court of Gasol and Mirotić, so that's just so horrible defensively.
All right, Adam, what you got?
I've got the Cavs, but I think it's going to be a close game. I think, you know, it's Hoiberg's first game there. And, you know, I would say Cavs in a blowout, but we lost to the Knicks last year to open the season. So, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, if we can lose to the Knicks, we can lose to anybody. But again, whatever happens.
LeBron playing tomorrow? I know LeBron is. I know Love's playing limited minutes. I didn't know if Mozgov was.
I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm not sure how they're going to...
We have LeBron playing, so I'm not worried.
Yeah, exactly. If he plays, I pick the Cavs.
I'm going to say that the Cavs will win this game. But opening night, funny things always happen. The games are always close. They're always intense. I'm really looking forward to checking that out. It will be on TNT, 8 o'clock tip. Cavs are back. The NBA is back. The Browns still stink. The Bills still stink. All is good in the Hardfall sports land. Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
Yes, real quick. I didn't mention this at the beginning. If anybody in Berea, Ohio listens to this podcast, and I know the Browns, actually one thing they do is they track social media pretty well. I know they've read some of our stuff. I'm sure they're probably listening. Who knows if they've listened 45 minutes into the podcast. But somebody tell Mike Pettine, we need 11 guys to play defense. 11. And for like the fifth time this year, we've been caught on a play with 10 people on the field playing defense. You're allowed to have 11. There's no such thing as a power play in the NFL. The offense doesn't get 11 while you get 10. So can somebody, for the love of God, hire a personnel person on the sideline that only is in charge of counting how many people are on the field? If anybody in Berea is listening, I'll do it. I don't care. I'll do it. You probably would never want me in that building.
Control coach.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yes. But for the love of God, we're bad enough on defense as it is. Okay, we can't play with 10 guys. So please, Mike Pettine, 11 men on defense. That's all I have to say.
Ernie, what you got? Anything?
Go Cavs.
Go Cavs. All right, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me back. I hopefully will not have any internet issues going forward or anything of the sort. I'm comfy and cozy in my new home, so I'm glad to be back with you guys. And we'll do it again next week, all right?
All right. Thanks, Tolls.
Good.
All right, for Adam and my friend Mike Arnold, I'm Mike Tolsma, Hard Foul Sports Cleveland podcast. Check us out at HFS Cleveland and at Hard Foul Sports. This was the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland podcast on hardfoulsports.com.